One of the places that my family likes to spend time is at the incredible state parks. We have 64 incredible state parks to enjoy. And we've got some people who are have been involved in studying and looking at those state parks a bit. Jeff Prey is the program and policy analyst in the planning and development section of the Division of Land for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. He's responsible for the state park system planning, policy, and development, the work that goes across the state. He's the primary author in the research and writing of the Wisconsin Statewide Outdoor Recreation Plan and the Wisconsin State Parks Strategic Plan. He's also involved with other state and federal partners in recreation management and development. And Jeff, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here this morning.
It's really great to have you with us. Dave Marcoulier with us as well, professor of urban and regional planning at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Dave and I worked together a number of times. Dave, great to see you again.
Hey, you too, Larry.
Really great to have you both with us. And we're going to be talking about the parks and about some research that's done on the positive impacts that our parks have on you and on me. How many visitors do Wisconsin State Parks see in a year? Dave, turn to you.
Well, actually, this data comes from the state park system. About 14 million annual park visits occur across the state.
That's a lot of people.
That ranks us roughly about 16th in the nation in terms of visitation. So we are a busy place, and we are busy year-round.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Is there a breakdown of, say, people that just come for a day versus long-term visitors? Dave?
In this study, what we did was we developed some expert-based knowledge through Delphi, and we asked the park superintendents and the people who manage the properties about their visitation. And of the 14 million visitors, what we were interested in doing was breaking this down between local and non-local.
Okay.
Because we're interested in coming up with an estimate of the private sector stimulus that comes into these regions. We have eight regions across the state. And for each property, we had estimates of the local and non-local, as well as day tripper and overnight guest elements.
And so do we certainly must know about their activities. Is it mostly camping, or is it what goes on?
You know, each park is unique in the sense that they draw visitors that partake in many different activities, from running and hiking to camping to cross-country skiing, wide variety of different types of activities.
Yeah, I'm thinking about what we do when we go to the parks. And in the wintertime, we're cross-country skiing maybe or snowshoeing. In summer, it may be swimming.
Right, and then you have places like Devil's Lake State Park that have rock climbing as a primary activity for lots of folks who like to climb rocks.
We also have a number of great bike trails that go crisscross across the state, and those are very popular, too, in terms of biking and hiking, horseback riding, all those kinds of activities that are part of that fabric for the state park system.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned Devil's Lake, and Kathy in Madison has a comment about that, so let's go there. Kathy, hi.
Hi, I'm Kathy, and I am my favorite state park is Devil's Lake. I'm sure I've been to at least 40 of the state parks over all these years with our family and with our grandchildren. We do hiking, we do bike riding on the trails, and we do cross-country skiing. Now, I wanted to mention also that I am ever so much disappointed that there is increased hunting in the state parks other than during the deer hunt season. And I feel that I need to telephone the park beforehand, and I need to find out every single time what is being hunted at this time of year.
Hmm.
And with the way that the hunting regulations are, lack of regulations, and the bullets that travel so much farther than the so-called safe zones, I still don't feel safe there. And so in any case, that's disappointment. The state parks are wonderful, but there is a huge disappointment.
All right. Let's get a comment from Jeff Prey. Jeff?
We had a law change about a year ago that, in essence, opened up state parks to hunting and trapping. That law, though, did give us some flexibility in terms of how we manage that recreational activity. And currently, it's a spring season and a fall season. The primary use of the times, the summertime, hunting and trapping is not allowed. So we try to find a balance here in terms of providing multiple aspects for recreation. And we think we've found a balance here in terms of trying to meet the needs for all those recreationalists on land and providing both safe and affordable recreation in a state park property.
Yeah. And thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate, Kathy, your comments. As you look at the state parks, and now Kathy's from Madison, so she's an in-state person. What is the breakdown between in-state and out-of-state? Do we have?
Well, what we looked at in this project had to do with the 8 SCORP regions, statewide comprehensive outdoor recreation planning regions. And if we look at those regions, basically about $1 billion is being spent by all visitors to state parks. And if we just look at the local, non-local breakdown, about $580 million is spent by non-locals. So that's the outside stimulus that comes into these regions as a result of the state parks being there.
Well, that's not a small change, is it?
It's a significant amount of spending that takes place, and it impacts tourism sector businesses around what we call gateway communities.
And gateway communities are just those communities nearby the parks and...
Right, that find themselves proximate to state parks and trails and recreation areas.
Yeah, so for example, when we... Fish Creek would be a gateway community for Peninsula State Park.
You bet.
Would be an example because we typically will stay in Fish Creek at a nice motel there. If we wouldn't be camping, we'd be staying right there. And that, frankly, right next to the doorway to get into the park.
Right. Another great example is Baraboo and Devil's Lake State Park.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that would be another gateway community. Mm-hmm. Angie in Green Bay. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you so much. I just have to say that I'm a single parent, and I have found the state parks to be this amazing opportunity in Wisconsin. The parks are, really varied in its structure. I think that's one of our favorite pieces. My daughter and I have traveled, all the way up to the Amakin Falls, way up in northern Wisconsin. It's a very quiet little park to, Baraboo, Devil's Lake, to Interstate Park. There's great amount of, the nature centers. We've found a lot of educational opportunities. I do have a comment or a question. Minnesota State Park have started ICANN opportunities. So one of the things that we're really interested in was ICANN rock climb. So they're opening this up to some of the younger population of the state to try and get them to visit the park. Not that I want to change the conversation to Minnesota, but is there any hope or plan in the future to kind of bring some of those ideas and concepts to Wisconsin?
All right. Good question. And let's turn to Jeff Prey of the DNR.
That's a great question. We actually do have a fairly strong interpretive and educational program with the state park system. We've got a number of different properties that we do have naturalists that do give you the opportunity to actually learn about the property itself and also get involved with recreational aspects. A good example is at Devil's Lake in terms of some of the interpretive programs that happen there. High Cliff State Park, another great spot to go and get some educational experiences. So we do have that connection. We continue to try to push forward in terms of having also private concessionaires come in and do some of those learning activities too on some of the state park properties.
Yeah. So there's, and you're always open to ideas on, I'm sure, in that area, Jeff.
We sure are, and some ideas that have been floated by us in the last couple of years or so are things like geocaching, how to learn to geocache, how to learn to mountain bike, all those kinds of great activities that you can do on our state park properties.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful. In terms of expense, it's a fairly inexpensive, you think about it, what's a park What does it cost to get a park sticker?
It's $25 for a resident for the entire year, and it's a bargain.
Yeah.
State trail pass is $15, and you know, you think about that compared to a gym membership, it's like almost free.
Yeah, you got that right. We are talking today. We got a couple of guests today. Jeff Bray, a program and policy analyst in the planning and development section of the Division of Land for our Department of Natural Resources. He's responsible for state park system planning. And Dave Marcoulier, a professor of urban and regional planning at the UW-Madison, talking with them, of course, about the economic and community benefits of our state parks. Gary and Boscobel, thank you for calling. Hi.
Thank you, Larry. I'd like to make a few comments about some of the state parks that I've associated with. Many of those state parks, the focus is on the campgrounds and the picnic areas and maintenance of those sites. But sadly, the rest of the state parks, especially the larger ones, are in dire neglect due to lack of knowledge by the park managers on environmental restoration and management of the plant communities that are within those parks. And unfortunately, a lot of those parks have grown up into invasive species, from weed species to invasive box elder trees and the Siberian elm and all kinds of stuff that's really degraded most of the habitat in a lot of those parks for wildlife habitat and plant communities. And I have several friends that have worked on a prairie restoration park in Yellowstone Park, started that project about 15 or 20 years ago. And at this point, because of the restrictions placed on us, we can't even get in there and do any management, put in thousands of dollars worth of seed and hundreds of hours of time planting these prairies, and now the restrictions are so prohibitive that we're not even allowed to get in there and maintain those prairies, and they're growing up into invasive species. And it just feels like it was a betrayal on the Bureau of Parks people, especially at the parks management level, for us to have invested this time as actual working partners with the DNR and now
losing out on that. Well, let's get a comment from Jeff Prey. Jeff?
We've got a number of different restoration activities that occur in our state park properties. Invasives is a huge issue on all state lands. It's a challenge for us to come in on a yearly basis and do management with those properties to control the invasives. But we do go ahead and do controls for, like, gypsy moth. We also do prairie burnings and a number of other activities that do try to get us to a point of having a better ecosystem on the state park properties. It's a never-ending challenge. We go through the same process year in and year out, but hopefully we do start to make some progress here for the restorations and ideas for savanna restoration and prairies as we go forward here.
Yeah, and Yellowstone itself, of the prairie restoration there?
I'm not familiar with the Yellowstone restoration, but we do have friends groups that come in and do work for us on a yearly basis to come in and do restoration work, and we enjoy and embrace those friends groups to come in and do those restoration activities for us.
Reed in Clintonville, let's turn to you next. Hi, Reed. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you very much for this opportunity. First, just one suggestion, and that is that the parks be renamed from state parks to state recreational and hunting parks. That said, my question is this, and I would like to know the percentage of support generated by people using the parks for non-hunting purposes as opposed to the percentage of support by people that use the parks as hunting grounds. I'm not opposed to areas across the state that are open and designated as hunting areas. But as far as the state parks are concerned, I think that the greatest percentage of support comes from non-hunting use, and we are subsidizing all of those hunters that are using the parks.
Okay, thanks for calling. And I don't know, Dave, in your research, do you have any...
Well, hunting on on state park properties is somewhat new, just as of last year. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, we on the 69 properties that we were focusing on, I don't think hunting came up in any of them. But it is something that is an increasing potential for use during certain times of the year. And I guess I guess I can leave it at that. Do you have anything more, Jeff?
Just a quick comment. Roughly about 18% of the population in the state hunts, so it's a fairly large number. But realizing also that we've got a lot of non-hunters here too that do enjoy the state park properties, that's why we came up with this structure in terms of both a short spring and a short fall season. Allow that activity to happen, but not get involved with recreational conflicts during the heavy, busy times of the year as we go forward here. Mm-hmm. And we're starting in year two of this new hunting framework, so we'll see how this goes through for the second year. And we've made some adjustments already. We'll make more as we go forward.
Yeah, so it's kind of brand new, and there's bound to be some more adjustments coming. I think
there probably are.
Yeah. Talking with Jeff Prey and Dave Marcoulier here today about our state parks. We're looking at the economic and community benefits of our state parks. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about how wonderful our state's natural areas have become, and of course, one of the strong voices for conservation was Wisconsin's own Aldo Leopold. More than 60 years after its publication, Leopold's A Sand County Almanac continues to influence conversations about the relationships between people and the land, and it also inspired musician Tim Southwick Johnson, who set many of Leopold's themes and words to music. In this episode of Wisconsin Life, Johnson shares his discovery of Leopold.
In 2010, I was performing at the Lake Geneva Conservancy fundraiser, and on a table they had a stack of paperback Sand County almanacs. So I grabbed it and took it home and started reading it that evening, and wham, I was hooked.
Fog over the marsh. See the white ghost of a glacier.
I knew just vaguely about, you know, his history, and that was it. So I think I had read part of the book in high school, but beyond that, this was really pretty much my introduction to him. As I read through some of the early chapters, I just kept stumbling across these lines where I said, oh, that'd make a great line in a song right there. And I kept finding more and more, and I thought, well, I'll write a song.
Come on home.
I was very fortunate. I played a performance at the Leopold Foundation Center north of Baraboo. And after I got done, I was about ready to go, and they wondered where I was heading for the night, and they said, well, you can stay here if you want. And they threw the keys to me for the shack, which, you know, it was just getting dark, and so I drove over there and found the kitchen matches and lit the oil lamps and went down to the river and watched the cranes fly home for the night. Just like you would expect in the book, and had a little fire out front. Kind of fantasized that maybe some of that wood was the good oak that he writes about, which is probably long gone. But had a really nice restful night. Woke up crack of dawn the following morning and played a little music out front, of course, and that was my visit. The realization that a lot of the things that he wrote about are still there. And to experience it firsthand and just to be in that environment by yourself was kind of an eye-opener for me in that, you know, yeah, this is very real still, maybe more real now than ever. You know, music can really bring out emotions that I don't want to discount the written word, of course, but music is ancient, and even as Leopold writes about the cranes,
those clamoring cranes,
the sound of the woodcock in flight, all the birds in the great possession section, that's all music. And I think that spoke to him. And even the wind in the trees and all that, there's a rhythm to it.
They bring life to this land, it's a sound of joy. Turn around the world.
If what I have done opens the eyes and ears.
Tim Southwick Johnson's latest album is Sand County Songs. Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. Wisconsin Life is a collaboration between Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. If you'd like to learn more, visit our website, wisconsinlife.org, and find them on Facebook. Great to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network as we talk with Jeff Bray of the Department of Natural Resources and Dave Marcoulier, Professor of Urban and Regional Planning at UW-Madison, about the economic and community benefits of our state parks. The DNR and the Department of Urban and Regional Planning at UW cooperated on a study, a fairly extensive study, on what goes on in our state parks, who uses them, what do they spend, what is the economic impacts to the communities, and talking about that, and certainly taking your questions and comments as we move along today. And I hope, again, you'll join us at 800-642-1234 with your questions and comments. What type of jobs are, you know, we've talked about some that are, Dave Marcoulier, that Jeff mentioned interpreters, and there's a little of that that goes on. But what are the jobs that are out there?
Well, certainly there are jobs in the state parks themselves. A lot of the primary job creation opportunity here that comes to the fore has to do with this non-local spending in local communities that surround the parks, right?
Okay.
So these are primarily retail and service sector type jobs, hotels, motels, restaurants, drinking establishments, other types of rental equipment proprietors.
Mm-hmm.
And our estimates are that the state park system helps support roughly 8,200 jobs across the state of Wisconsin, which is a real sizable amount of economic impact.
Yeah, that is. And maintenance came up as an issue or a question for somebody. How's maintenance and how are maintenance and improvements on the state parks done and Jeff and paid for?
We've got a number of ongoing projects for operations and maintenance with our state park system. We've got a number of different funds that that support that operations and maintenance and development aspect of the state parks. One is just the fees you pay are also the fees that we put back into the state park system. So the $25, most of that goes right back into the state park system for operations and maintenance. We also have the state stewardship fund that allows us to come in and do redevelopments and developments for campgrounds, for day use areas, for beaches, those kinds of things that allows us to push that forward in terms of providing good and safe areas for people to recreate. Maintenance is an ongoing issue. We've got a system that continues to age, and mm-hmm. we are addressing that in terms of looking at improvement plans for a number of different state park properties going forward here.
Yeah. And so the cost on that was about, I think I read somewhere, $25 million, something like that, Jeff?
Exactly. In terms of just operating the state park system, it's about a $25 million a year operation. And we are funded roughly three-quarters from the fees that people pay to us. So so we've got a real balancing act here to make sure that we keep our customers coming back and our visitors and make sure that they enjoy the state park properties and to make sure that they understand that their fees are part of that system going forward.
I'd just like to just add one thing to this. You know, $25 million in costs for this park system, yet the park system brings in roughly $500 million in outside sector
so
stimulus.
That's quite a surplus there when you're...
The return on investment is substantial.
Is that similar to other states? Do you know?
Other states are funded a variety of different ways. Can be from lodging aspects, can be the park sticker fees to a number of different aspects. Could be royalties from oil and gas leases. There are a number of different ways that state park properties are funded. In this state, though, we are an admission-based system that allows us to keep the parks maintained and going.
Oh. Well, we have lots of callers, and I want to give Edie and Baraboo a chance to join in. Edie, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. I have two different things to say, and I hope I don't forget the second one. I had taken a trip this fall out to Glacier National Park and came the northernest most route I could, went to the International Peace Gardens and Voyager National Park, and was coming through Wisconsin. I was getting tired, and I saw a sign for this Amican State Park. Mm. And so I drove in there. It was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
And so this morning when I got up, I'm thinking about going this summer again. I got my Wisconsin map out and looked it up. And I thought, oh, that's way too long for a one-day trip. And so then I turn your, you know, you guys are talking about it, and the previous caller talked about it, and I said, I have to call because it was beautiful. And I want to go back. Just very quiet and trails all over, and there were some little kids there that were sliding down the rocks and the falls, and just wonderful.
So
thank you for having that one. Then the second thing I want to say is that Devil's Lake, of course, I'm in Baraboo, they got a new nature interpreter or whatever, and she has programs almost every weekend. Anything from snakes to going out and watching woodcocks and hikes, and they're all free.
Oh, yeah.
So if you find out what the programs are, you can come here, spend some time out there and learn something, and it doesn't cost you a thing.
Yeah.
So those are the two things I wanted to say.
Well, Edie, thanks. You should go to my Facebook page because the photo that's up there kind of promoting the show is from Amican Falls.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so go take a look. Actually, our news director took that photo.
I think I have to go back now. I mean, this is three things. So.
Thanks, Edie.
Okay. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Comments, guys? Jeff, turn to you.
Just a quick one. When we go out and survey our park users, they tell us that they like to have solitude and quiet recreation as part of their experience, but also to preserve those significant places. And Amican Falls is one of those places that is very unique and very special.
Oh, it's beautiful. It is a really gorgeous place, no doubt about it. We have John in Freedom. Let's go to John. Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I just want to address some points some previous callers made. Number one, when you restrict hunting in an area like local nature centers and state parks, you put an area that deer populations can just explode exponentially. A lot of local nature centers and state parks and other protected areas are suffering heavily from deer browse to the point where there's almost no natural regeneration of the ecosystem that's there. So some type of balance needs to be maintained so you can preserve the ecosystems of state parks and other properties protect. The second comment that I have is if you are truly upset about the lack of maintenance, write your state senators, your state legislatures on two things. Number one, or actually a couple things. Number one, restore the Noel Nelson Stewardship Fund to what it was prior to this session taking place, that $100 million plus or whatever it was. Have your state legislatures also consider funding terrestrial invasive species at the same level we do aquatics in the state and increasing both programs. Because without those dedicated funds, as a former invasive species coordinator, the work's not going to get done unless you have the friends groups there to do it.
Great comment in terms of the balance we have to have here in terms of deer management on our properties. The deer can be an issue in terms of overbrowsing on the properties that causes us then to try to think about other solutions here to get us to a point of ecosystem restoration. We do tend to think that a reduced deer population is better for the state park system just in terms of being out for us to be able to come in and actually do restoration work going forward. And there were some adjustments in the stewardship fund in the last budget cycle. We're hoping that the stewardship fund continues and that we see those investments put back into the state park system.
Yeah, absolutely. John, thanks again for calling. Appreciate it very much. We have Roger in Spring Green next. Roger, hi.
Hi, I had a question. You guys are talking about the benefit. I have two questions, actually, but the first one is, you guys are talking about the benefits to, financial benefits to communities around state parks, which sounds like you're trying to justify or give some explanation of that. As a state resident and taxpayer, I'm wondering what percentage of the state park running budget comes from taxpayers versus what comes from their own revenue? Then I have a second question.
Okay, that, so let's take that one first. Jeff, you want to?
Sure. The breakdown is roughly 75% of our operating budget. It comes from the state park fees. The other 25% is from the general tax revenue. So that just comes from the general fund going forward here. That has flipped. 10 years ago, it was the reverse. And so we've seen a sort of a trend here in terms of us being more self-sustaining as we go forward with those state park fees as we enter into this decade and the next one.
Mm. Okay.
All right. Thanks. Then my other comment, I just wanted to mention why Lucene State Park at the mouth of the Wisconsin River dumping into the Mississippi overlooks the area. Absolutely gorgeous. They have a facility that maybe not everybody knows about. They have an indoor group campsite, which is quite rare. I think there's only one other in the state, but this is the only one this large. It has four dorm buildings, houses up to 108 people, plus a main lodge building with a commercial kitchen and two other big rooms, including an indoor fireplace. Very nice facility, rentable by the public.
All right. Roger, thank you. Appreciate it very much. Talk a little bit more about that facility, Jeff.
Well, Lucene State Park is just an absolutely gorgeous state park. It is at the confluence of the Wisconsin-Mississippi rivers. You've got great vistas there. It's a park that's been in the system for quite a long time. We do have a number of camping opportunities at Wild Lucene, both traditional camping opportunities, but also this indoor group camp. And it is a busy place. It is rentable almost every weekend, and we get a lot of youth groups and other types of activities revolving around that indoor group camp.
So they stay overnight?
They sure do. They sure do. It's a big dorm-style building with a big common kitchen, and the kids and the adults just love it.
Oh, yeah, that sounds wonderful. Mike and Madison, turn to you next. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I've got kind of a question and then kind of a concern, I guess. The question is, how many parks have snowmobile trails and ATV or UTV trails? And then how many quantities of fossil fuels are burned for recreational purposes in the state park system? It's bad for the environment, and I don't believe the DNR should be promoting that kind of use.
So snowmobile and ATV. Okay. Jeff, go to you.
We've got a number of snowmobile trails throughout our state park system. They also use our linear trail systems also. It's a very traditionally based activity in this state. It's been around for a long, long time, and with a lot of huge economic impacts from snowmobiling as we go forward. ATV, and there aren't too many spots on the state park lands that you can ATV. The one is the Bong Recreation Area, right down southeast corner of the state. There is a small loop down there that you can ATV in right now. The other is the Menominee River State Recreation Area, where there's an ATV connection that runs through that property, too. So those are relatively small in terms of the state park properties going forward here.
And, Mike, thanks again for calling. Wyatt in Dubuque, Iowa. Hello to you.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Hi, I'm from Dubuque, Iowa, obviously. I really enjoy Wisconsin State Parks. I hunt and fish in Wisconsin, and I belong to a conservation club up there. I live right on the river, so I'm active on both Wisconsin and Iowa side. First of all, I wanted to voice my appreciation for the wildlife habitat restoration that does go on in Wisconsin State Parks. Within the last couple of years, I tried to sell a tallgrass prairie restoration project and on privately owned land, and I really had nowhere to go in Wisconsin other than Yellowstone State Park in order to take people to show them what native tallgrass prairie actually looks like. Many people have never really seen it. So thank you for that, and I wanted to remind the people residing in Wisconsin that what you're doing and protecting in your state parks is priceless. Yeah. You really can't put a price tag on what the people of your state are doing to preserve the state parks. And furthermore, I also want to suggest I heard a lot of concern about
hunting and also, you know, burning fossil fuels on the state park. And one of the reasons why your parks are priceless is because basically industrialized agriculture is chiseling away at your state and my state wildlife habitat and topsoil. Obviously, the state parks can't present the or they can't prevent the fragmentation of the habitat, but it's again, it is priceless. You know, having a place to set aside for everybody in the public to enjoy, no matter what their recreational activities do, is because it you know gives people like me a place to show people what how beautiful our landscape can be, and also keeps people involved in all outdoor recreation, no matter what type it is.
Dave, you were going to, McCurley, you were going to say something.
Yeah, Wyatt points out a really important element associated with the value of our state park system. The project that we undertook looked at market-based values, right? The private sector stimulus that came in as a result of spending. But Wyatt identifies the notion that there's some really important aspects of our state park system that reflect non-market benefits. And these would include things like legacy conservation, cultural amenity preservation, ecosystem function value, option bequest and existence value, a whole host of values that we as a society hold dearly that are difficult to quantify, but they're very important aspects. We've only scratched the surface here with respect to market-based values.
Some really good points. Wyatt, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Stan in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Oh, thanks for taking my call, Larry. I just want to, several calls back, and I think several other calls, have discussed the importance of public input. And I wish to stress the importance of citizens getting involved in planning for the state parks. And one of the things that I've been very concerned about, and others have also, is that the state has the DNR and the board, and the DNR and the state have decided to have a state recreation area directly south of Devil's Lake State Park. And the one of the plans that was floated was an idea to introduce non-traditional sports in that area, which abuts against the state park, such as paintballing, ATV vehicles, a firing range, all kinds of non-traditional things were suggested in that area. So I just, and this was open for public discussion, comment, there was a comment period, and it was roundly defeated by the public. There were hundreds and hundreds of people who wrote comments objecting to this, and it has required the DNR to rethink the whole operation, the whole concept of what a state recreation area south of Devil's Lake State Park should look like.
We are currently working on the Sauk Prairie Recreation Area Master Plan. That should come out sometime in 2014 for public review and comment. We encourage the public to comment on that plan, and at that point we'll bring it back in. We work those comments into the plan and then take it to our Natural Resources Board, hopefully by this time next year. So lots of opportunities yet to public comment on that project going forward.
And you're certainly, as Stan says, it is very important for public comment.
You bet. We've had over 4,000 public comments already on this project, so we expect more to come yet.
Guys, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today, and I hope we have a chance to do this again. Appreciate it very much.
Larry, thank you.
Thank you.
Jeff Ray is the Program and Policy Analyst in the Planning and Development Section of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Division of Land, and is responsible for the state park system planning, policy, and development work across our state. Dave Marcoulier, researcher and professor of urban and regional planning at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Great to have them with us, and we'll surely talk more about our state parks. I hope you're going to stay tuned because we're going to be talking about the Peace Corps. Our state parks are a real treasure. And coming up next, though, the Peace Corps. What kinds of benefits does it provide both to the host communities and to the volunteers as well? Maybe you were in the Peace Corps, or maybe you want to know more about it. Well, stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.